And welcome back to the SEC on CBS podcast here on CBS Sports. I am your host, Chip Patterson. Dennis Dodd joins for a big edition of the Doddcast. We're talking about Tennessee's new athletic director, Alabama's new offensive coordinator, a one-year postseason ban for Hugh Freeze and the Ole Miss Rebels. What does it mean for the program? What does it mean for the coach? And with the NFL Combine coming up this weekend, we've got a spotlight on North Carolina quarterback Mitch Trubisky and what NFL teams see in the North Carolina quarterback. Make sure that you're subscribed on iTunes, TuneIn, or Stitcher, and enjoy another Doddcast. Back here on the SEC on CBS podcast, Chip Patterson here, Dennis Dodd over there. It's a Doddcast. Dennis, we've got we don't always catch a lot of breaking news at this time of the year, though spring practice is getting going, and we will be getting into that in a little bit. But we've got some administrative moves and some coaching moves in the SEC. We will begin on the administration side. Tennessee's athletic director search has been going on for a while now, Dennis, and John Curry is the final tap. Now, that is particularly interesting, first for me, because one of the big talking points and a very divisive talking point was the candidacy of Phil Fulmer. Now, once we got into this, once the name John Curry got out, I realized, Dennis, this is your boy. You know this guy. Tell us a little bit about John Curry. You know what? How you saw this search play out, and what Tennessee fans can expect from their new athletic director.
Well, I kicked myself for not thinking of him throughout the whole process, because
he was there.
He was Mike Hamilton's number two at Tennessee, for better or worse. So during the Lane Kiffin era, and was there, I think, was at Kansas State, John Curry, 8 years, did great things, oversaw $210 million in facilities upgrades in terms of a state-of-the-art football facility, a build-out, really a renovation of the west side of the stadium, I think a tennis stadium or something like that. But but did great things at Kansas State. The downside was a lot of people think he ran off Frank Martin to South Carolina and never did get along very well totally with Bill Snyder.
With him moving, does that mean the next athletic director has to make a decision on basketball coach Bruce Weber?
Well, that and probably Bill Snyder in the near term, certainly. Bruce Weber looks like K-State's not going to make the tournament, so they may have to make a change with the interim AD, Laird Veach, unless they you know make this hire quickly. I don't know what their timeline is. And then certainly with Bill Snyder, you know, we talked about Greg Byrne at Alabama being the guy that's going to replace Nick Saban someday. I think much more recent or quickly will be Bill Snyder at age 77, coming off cancer. I as I've told people, I think as good as he is, I think this, you know, we can see now the end in sight for Bill Snyder. I might be right or wrong. He might go 10 more years, but that's going to have to come up for this new AD as well.
Well, he'd certainly like us to think that he can do 10 more years.
Yes.
I mean, I don't think I've ever seen somebody handle rumors of health issues. And of course, rumors of health issues when you are Bill Snyder's age carry a little bit of a different weight in the news cycle. But then to come back so triumphantly, announcing your diagnosis, but then also announcing that you will be back on the field this fall, not planning to miss time. It was quite aggressive, I must say.
And from what I hear, coached the bowl game with the diagnosis, took whatever it was, five rounds of treatment, and that's why we're now, you know, he's now saying that he's going to be back for spring practice. In the next time we'll see Bill Snyder surface is when they start spring practice on or about March 29th, whenever he has his press conference. I don't think anyone else will be able to get to him before then. It'll be a public thing, but yeah, you're right. Quite the Teflon coach there. Physically,
right.
You're right.
When we look at the coaching carousel, when we talk about hot seats, definitely your domain and a service that you provide for us at CBS Sports. But the Butch Jones spot becomes interesting now, because You know, the old rule of thumb is that if you're on the hot seat and the athletic director who's sitting is not the athletic director who hired you, then it's just not going to be the same level of commitment necessarily in the same relationship, and that it might change your outlook in terms of where you sit. In terms of being able to continue to keep coaching at that school if you're not able to succeed. I think, just as you know, somebody who covers the sport, for whatever that means, that the window for big-time success at Tennessee has opened and shut. And while Butch Jones has done a pretty good job on the recruiting trail and changing Tennessee's profile, I don't think they enter 2017 with the kind of roster that is going to be built to win even the SEC East, much less an SEC championship. So do you think that John Curry coming to Tennessee, what does that mean for Butch Jones, and what does that change at all his trajectory with the Vols?
Well, I think it's what you said. I think anytime you change ADs and it's not the guy who hired you, then everything's up for evaluation, and I think this is a bad year to be up for evaluation.
Right?
Coming off that 9-win year when so much was expected, when they didn't win the East, when they were prohibitive favorites to win the East and should have been, losing Josh Dobbs, Derek Barnett, Alvin Kamara, among others. Even in a watered-down East, Tennessee's not going to win it this year. And what does that mean for John Curry? So I think that's going to be his first order of business. Maybe a short leash for Butch Jones. You know what? Which there would have been anyway if Dave Hart Jr. would have been there. I think the pressures would have been such that okay, we've seen Butch Jones's ceiling, and that's all we're going to get. And you know, I think the fact that whatever it is, 8 or 9 years now, the SEC East has been more or less open, but has not won the SEC, that it just puts even much more pressure on schools like Tennessee to get up there and do it.
Yeah, the reports coming out of Knoxville after what was a life championship year, but not an SEC East mm-hmm. championship year, did not seem glowing, did not seem warm, did not seem fuzzy. Plenty of time for the eternal optimist Butch Jones to turn things around. But that is something. I mean, it's just something that I think is always interesting, you know. And John Curry's only 46, you know, just getting started in terms of his career in the industry. I mean, that's pretty young for an SEC athletic director, right?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. He's just hitting a stride.
Yeah.
And has not, you know, his hires have been, you know, Bruce Weber at Kansas State in basketball, for better or worse, but obviously nothing in football. So this is going to be a huge test of him and Tennessee. This opens up a bigger window here. Boy, next year I think is good, if not the number of jobs that are going to be open that we think, I think certainly the significance of them. When you start thinking about Texas A&M, you start thinking about Tennessee, you know, maybe a UCLA, if Jim Moore goes back to the NFL, there's going to be some significant jobs open next year.
From potentially earth-shaking and landscape-changing moves at the top level to a move that I don't know if Brian Daboll changes anything as the new offensive coordinator and quarterbacks coach for Alabama Crimson Tide. Here's what Alabama fans should like. He came from the Patriots. He has the rich, rich bloodline of coaching. But I look at him and think that whoever was going to be hired by Nick Saban, if it was not going to be a Chip Kelly, a Mark Helfrich, sort of a big splashy name, a top offensive mind, then I figured that whoever they got was going to be somebody that was going to fall in line. And that's not necessarily a bad thing, but it's almost like the feeling that we got from Lane Kiffin when Lane Kiffin got loose lips after he got the FAU job, and he started talking about how pretty much everyone needs to fall in line on that staff. That's what I kind of think Brian Daboll is going to do. And I don't mean to be dismissive in that, but is that a fair assumption?
Yeah. No, I think this is, you know, this calms the waters at Alabama. You know, the last two offensive coordinators, which I'm basically talking about the last 2 months, were in Alabama on rehab assignments, if for lack of a better term. Now Brian Daboll has a lot to live up with Lane Kiffin, but he's on that upward arc still. I mean, think about Jim McElwain, went from Alabama to Florida. Lane, in some sense, cleaned himself up and is now a head coach again. You know, has three SEC championship rings. Steve Sarkisian with the Atlanta Falcons. But, you know, those last two guys had been head coaches and were trying to remake their image. Brian Daboll, still an assistant on the upward curve, as I said in the piece. He comes from being the Rob Gronkowski coach. I don't know how hard that is. Here, go run a route and win the game for us. But he has been an offensive coordinator 4 years in the NFL. His teams never finished higher than 20th in total yards. That being said, he was stuck with some pretty average quarterbacks with the Dolphins and Browns and Chiefs. So, you know, why not? I think two things. Anything rubber stamped by Bill Belichick is probably good enough for Nick Saban. If it's good enough for Nick Saban, he's probably going to be good.
Right. I can't help but think that, you know, even with no eye-popping candy, you know, we love to have candy. Yeah. Oh, he was the coach of so-and-so. You know, he led this, that, or the other player or team. And, no, you just tell me that he is from the Belichick line. Sure. Okay. Mm-hmm. He probably believes philosophically many of the same things that Nick Saban does, and it sure seems like being on the same philosophical page as Nick Saban is a high priority if you want to be on that staff right now.
Anything they do, and this is a constant struggle, not really a constant struggle, but the center of the philosophy at Alabama is to incorporate a power running game. And I can't criticize Lane for that because Derrick Henry was running the ball 90 times in two games at the end of his career in 2015. So they got it. They did it last year with a little bit more running back by committee. So whatever they do, and I think they'll keep these spread concepts. They'll have to with Jalen Hurts. That, you know, they'll have a power running game at its center. I don't think much will change.
This week on CBSSports.com, Dennis, you've got a profile on potentially the top quarterback in this upcoming 2017 NFL draft, and it's a player who only was a starter for 1 year. Talking about, of course, North Carolina quarterback Mitch Trubisky. I've been a little bit more intimately familiar with his past.
Yes.
Not, you know, if only because it's who all of my buddies have been screaming his name just because he was Mr. Football in the state of Ohio like 5 years ago. They were certain that he was going to be the truth for about the last half decade. And finally, once given the opportunity, he certainly was. What was your impression of the former North Carolina quarterback?
I think it's just what he represents. He had a great year. He played in the best conference in the country at the end of the year. The ACC turned out to be the best league in the country. He was that conference's third-team quarterback, but he may be the number one quarterback taken in the draft, and I think that's what fascinates me about the story, because we head into the combine. It is an average quarterback class, and this guy's the best of the class. He had a chance to come back. He consulted, believe it or not, with Peyton Manning and Andrew Luck in depth, two guys who stayed 4 years. Andrew Luck didn't exhaust his eligibility, but he did stay 4 years. Peyton stayed 4 years and still came out. You know, when it probably would have been wise for him to stay, except the draft grade he got back was first round. And in that's what's so unique about this. He's going to be one of the top two quarterbacks taken. Okay. I went back and looked at the top three quarterbacks taken in the last 5 years, the average amount of starts for those guys. And we're talking about everybody from Garrett Grayson to Jameis to Marcus Mariota to Jared Goff is 32 games. So that's the average. He's got 13 starts.
Wait, Garrett Grayson, the old Colorado State quarterback?
the old Colorado State quarterback was the third quarterback taken in, I believe, 2015. Oh. I have to go back and look. And I had to double check that. I went, wow. By the Saints, and I couldn't tell you if he's still with the Saints or not.
But, yeah, I couldn't. I mean,
I don't know if he's in the league, but that's 32 average starts. Go ahead.
No, that's just you and I hearing that name and only thinking about like Colorado State and Capri Bibbs and watching too much Mountain West football late on a Saturday night. That's all that is. I think that the interesting piece of the Trubisky story, particularly number one, and this is something that you and I just have said off air, just as friends. I mean, it's North Carolina, like the long storied history of quarterbacks at North Carolina it starts and ends maybe with T.J. Yates.
T.J. Yates, the only quarterback drafted in the last 42 years at North Carolina. Fifth rounder, I believe, still in the league, if I'm not mistaken. I checked yesterday. I think he's still in the league. So he has been a serviceable guy, at least carrying a clipboard and playing some games. But, yeah, and I talked to Larry Fedora about that. It definitely helps the program. I mean, we're talking about maybe the number one quarterback taken in the draft coming from a top five basketball school. And look, how often does that happen? I mean, for that to happen, we're talking about – a quarterback from Kansas or Duke or, Kentucky. It is equivalent to that. So good for North Carolina.
Do you think – what are the – outside of the experience, what do you think are the negatives about Mitch Trubisky? What are you hearing or what do you believe are going to be the things that could keep him the knock on Trubisky, I guess?
The negatives are, look, he can make every throw, but what quarterback can't? I mean, that's almost the quarterback prospect bingo card. Makes all the throws. You know,
right.
Quick learner. I talked to Rob Rang, our draft analyst guy. Makes all the throws. He loves his pocket movement, which I think is significant in the NFL. You're not going to be a running quarterback per se because you're going to get the poo knocked out of you sooner or later. Cam Newton found that out. So just to avoid the rush, he has that innate ability. Something Rob brought up that I didn't even include in the piece was the fact that, believe it or not, there's a lot of NFL talent. There was a lot of NFL talent on that North Carolina team last year, Ryan Switzer for one. And he wonders if that may have artificially, helped Mitch Trubisky and making him look better than he really is. Now that's why I didn't include it in the piece. It's a little bit convoluted, but
yeah,
worth mentioning.
No. And like Mitch Trubisky had a great year, but Marquise Williams, who was the starting quarterback the year before him, shattered 35 offensive records.
He was a better college quarterback, but didn't play in the league. And Mitch Trubisky projects better as an NFL quarterback. I think that's the nexus of this story, and to the point that GMs are willing to take him after 13 starts, and if they don't, they might lose a franchise quarterback to someone else.
Mm. So interesting. I don't know if this played a role in Mitch Trubisky's decision making, but not only Ryan Switzer, but they're losing Elijah Hood and TJ Logan. I mean, it is a skill position exodus at North Carolina right now. It helped North Carolina a little bit in recruiting because they were able to go out and sort of showcase automatic playing time for all the top running backs and slot wide receivers in the country when they were on the trail. But this was it. You know, the window, you know, they were able to get an ACC Coastal Championship out of it, you know, lose to Clemson by one score in the ACC Championship game, come back the next year, and you end up producing one of the top quarterbacks in the NFL draft. You know, this little window, like it'll be very interesting to see not just Trubisky, but the rest of those players from that, you know, the horrible word, system, the rest of the players from Fedora's system to get out there and go.
And he was, like you say, you alluded to, he was a Mr. Ohio, very highly rated, coming out of Northeast Ohio. Ohio State decided on JT Barrett out of Wichita Falls, Texas, and that made him look elsewhere. And that was quite a coup for North Carolina for him to go there. It just didn't register that much at that time unless you were a recruiting guru. And he and he panned out. Let me mention this. This is the thing that GMs face. And I talked about the lack of experience. Cam Newton had only 14 career starts at Auburn. The difference being the year before he won a JUCO championship at Blinn. Okay. He also was the best player in the country and was the number one pick overall. But where are we at in this league right now? Or last year, Carson Wentz, an FCS guy who was coming off a bunch of injuries, who only started 22 games. Ryan Tannehill 5 years ago switched from receiver to quarterback and made 19 career starts, still in the league, still starting. Trevor Siemian at Denver, for better or worse, started only 14 of 44 games at Northwestern, and he was a seventh round pick. I think all those situations are different than what Trubisky faces, because you're putting your franchise on the guy.
Mitch Trubisky also was in an open starting competition for three different springs, I think.
Yeah, and good for him that he won that. But, you know, 6'3", I talked to Gil Brandt. He said, I've heard that he's 6'1 and 5'8", which in the NFL will be huge. You know, every half inch can be a drop in the draft. So if that's the case, that'll hurt him. But we'll see. I mean, there's a lot to learn. I hate the underwear Olympics, frankly, at the combine. I think it's way overrated. But I'll watch. I'll watch this guy.
You will?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I can't Absolutely. Watch. I can't watch the combine. Oh my gosh, it's on my spring football pet peeve list. I would rather watch them play two-hand touch down in Jordan-Hare Stadium than I would rather.
I totally get it.
Oh yeah, my gosh,
I get hooked by the 40, where I'm sitting there watch these guys. They may be selling insurance next year, but God dang it, I'm going to watch the top 10 in the 40. You know, okay, this guy went. Well, I remember when Jameis ran the 40. He was awful. Remember he did a 4.8 or something?
Yeah.
And you're going, are you kidding me? And it did. I remember talking to Jimbo Fisher. You know, I was like, he did a 4.5 for us. Okay, really? Okay, well, then what are we talking about? You know, I mean, what are any of us talking about when that's the case? Obviously, Jameis has become a great pro.
Yeah, and if you couldn't tell by big old lumbering Jameis's running style that he might not be fast off the blocks, that shouldn't surprise you. Excuse me. Do you want to get three meals free with free shipping from Blue Apron? Well, you can do it by going to blueapron.com/SEC. That's right, the affordable option with less than $10 per person per meal. Blue Apron delivers seasonal recipes along with pre-portioned ingredients to make delicious home-cooked meals. I had these incredible pork burgers just last night. They came with some potatoes. They came with a great side, and it was good to eat on the front porch with my wife. It's flexible, it's easy, and listen, the freshness guarantee promises that every ingredient in your delivery arrives ready to cook, or they will make it right. So check out this week's menu and get your first three meals free with free shipping by going to blueapron.com/SEC. You'll love how good it feels, tastes to create incredible home-cooked meals with Blue Apron. So don't you wait. That's blueapron.com/SEC. Blue Apron, a better way to cook. The Ole Miss postseason ban that many expected were coming has been announced. But that is not necessarily the end of these punishments. As Ole Miss has come out, it has announced some of the major allegations that are against the program. Hugh Freeze has been at the face of this as well. What do you see for Ole Miss football as they begin to enter the painful process, which, as you know, we've reviewed a lot of NCAA cases on this podcast before. This is only beginning. They still need to go and they need to meet with the Committee on Infractions. There's the appeal process. We're really just getting things going, but the idea, the rumors that had been floating through in the last couple months that Ole Miss would be, quote, hammered by the NCAA, do you see from our first bit of actual knowledge of where the case is headed, do you still see that happening?
Yeah, I don't know if anybody can predict any of that. I put it in my piece when I reacted to it last week that there's a disclaimer that goes with any of these cases, and I mean any of them. There's what we know, what we think we know, what we don't know, and then what actually can be proven inside that committee on infractions room when they actually have the hearing. On the outside, superficially, it looks really bad. I think the feeling from the beginning with Ole Miss 4 years ago, when they landed that top 10 recruiting class, was too big too soon. At least culturally in the SEC, they were a non-traditional power. They'd wrestled some players away from some traditional powers, and I think that drew everybody's attention. And now we know what's been alleged. I, for lack of a better word, if you believe that there was bad things going on, that they were sloppy about it. You know, it was out in the open according to the NCAA. In recruiting violations, the Laramie Tunsil thing, the coach control thing, which is fascinating to me on Hugh Freeze. By the way, not only would he be the first coach ever suspended under the new coach control legislation, which was put in 2013, the first football coach, he'd be the first football coach ever charged with that. I don't think any other coach has even been charged with that. In other words, this goes back to the old Pete Carroll criticism. I know his name's not in the report, but come on. He knew what was going on, and I call it the Pete Carroll rule. And the NCAA membership decided in 2013, you know what? Yeah, that should be the case. So it's a stricter standard, and the upshot is he could be suspended.
Yeah, and that's where other coaches, like the big argument for a lot of the current cases in front of the NCAA, if a coach is related, is that they wanted to make sure it was prosecuted under the old rules. This would be the first one.
Yeah. This isn't the first overall case prosecuted under the new rules, but it would be the first time a football coach would be subject to that rule, because Jim Boeheim's been suspended under the new rule at Syracuse. Larry Brown, I think, for half a season at SMU.
Yep.
But I think basketball is just a whole lot different than football. When you miss 9 games at Syracuse, or even half a season at SMU, you're playing 35 games. If you miss 3 games at Ole Miss, that's tremendous upheaval. That could make or break your season. And does the school decide, after all that, with that stain on your record, if indeed it comes to that, to keep the coach? I think all those things have to be decided.
Do you think that with Ole Miss, the fact that NCAA violations and some off, it's just like some right out of a movie kind of scandals, you know, from the Laramie Tunsil NFL draft video to all the different things related to Robert Kimdichie. Like, do you think that the whole thing sort of unfurled in a way that the rest of the SEC is now gets not vindication, but they get to at least point? Because that's when Ole Miss started recruiting at a high level out of nowhere. You know, that's the old joke, right? I mean, they are not helping themselves with the fact that it almost became a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Yeah, there were questions around the country, frankly, and inside the SEC as to how Ole Miss got this good this fast. I'll put it that way. And I'm not pronouncing sentence on them at all, because other programs have gotten fast, really, or gotten good really fast, quickly as well. So, yeah, I think you put it the exact same way, you know. And like I said, I think it's sloppy to the point that in the amended notice of allegations, I think people are kind of skating over this. We're looking at $20,000 changing hands between boosters and prospects in the form of cash, food, drinks, extra benefits. People want to concentrate on the $13,000 to $15,000. Add it all up, it's more than $20,000, and that is significant.
How much? But where does that stand next to? I mean, it doesn't touch Nevin Shapiro kind of benefits.
No, it doesn't. But it's spelled out.
Right.
The NCAA screwed that up. I don't think they're going to screw this one up. Miami got off with a wrist slap, even though they self-penalized themselves to bowls. I think something else you have to talk to about the Ole Miss case too is the immunity. I was asked on the Feinbaum show this week about you know, the immunity, the NCAA's using immunity, using Mississippi State players. And I said, Paul, it's not about Mississippi State. It's about the fact that the NCAA can and will, in any given case, use immunity. I look at, you raised the Nevin Shapiro case at Miami. There were 72 players involved, if you remember that. To get to the heart of that case, they gave a lot of players that still had eligibility left immunity to sing. Going back to 1988 with Hartley Dykes put four schools on probation, was given immunity, and allowed to post an All-America season and go to the NFL, telling the NCAA he'd taken cars and cash and everything else from four schools. So in this case, I guess my point is it's not unique. It is allowed. If the membership didn't want it, they wouldn't use it. So there's a lot of stuff there we don't know, from the mere fact that we haven't seen the amended notice yet itself.
What was the vibe on the Feinbaum show? I mean, is everybody angry? I mean, I have not taken the time to hunt down the player's name, but I believe that Ole Miss fans know who at least one of the student athletes who told is. Or yeah, they believe to know.
I believe there was a player that they recruited that went to Auburn. I think that was public. That was written about. That may have been that may have given information to the NCAA, whether it was with immunity or not. I don't know. But the vibe, that was still reaction stage. I didn't stay around for Tammy to give her her two cents.
About
Auburn's view of things, so no.
Yeah, not for Tammy to come in and to defend snitches get stitches or whatever.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. This is, look, unless Ole Miss maybe wants to go to the mattresses and drop a dime on everybody else now, because that's what tore apart the old Southwest Conference when these scandals start erupting. I it might be in their best interest to just get this thing wrapped up as soon as possible, because Chip, they are all in, for better or worse, with Hugh Freeze. Mm. And if he is given the coach control sanction, if he is suspended, I said this from the beginning, I think they'll take him back.
Wow.
I think they'll take him back. It'll be a speed bump to them. And they've been to unprecedented heights with him, two New Year's Six bowls in a row, beat Alabama twice. You know, they go back in many ways to being, you know, average at Ole Miss if they get rid of Hugh Freeze.
Wow. It's one of these cases where it's got to be tough to be Hugh Freeze. To win at that level, you know, even with, you know, obviously some other things going on in the background, but to win at that level and then to know that your future, to even have to consider whether your future with the program is going to be solid, it's got to be tough.
Yeah, then there's the point of the sanctimonious Hugh Freeze, which a lot of people don't like, his proselytizing with his faith intertwined with football. It wouldn't be the first coach, but I think there's a little bit of some people are resentful of that, again, because they got so good so quick. I'm not going to decry anybody's religion, but I think there's that faction of people out there that resent that, with the cloud hanging over the program, that they may have cheated. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying there's critics of that.
Oh yeah, not so holier than thou, huh?
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
No, it's a natural reaction. It's one we've seen before, and faith in college football in the South have been woven together very tightly for a long, long time. Not too surprising. All right, Dennis, thanks for hopping back on. Little overtime edition of the SEC on CBS podcast. We closed it out well. We scored first, and we won the game.
As the great Bill Paxton once said, game over, man. Game over.
R.I.P. Thanks, Dennis.
All right, see ya.